Hour of 10:15 having arrived, I want to call to order this meeting of the Committee on Taxes. There is a quorum present. Representative Elkins, have you had a chance to review the minutes from March 27th, 2025?
Captain, they look fine, Madam Chair. I move their approval.
Excellent. Representative Elkins has moved approval of the minutes for March 27th, 2025. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion carries. The minutes for March 27th, 2025 are adopted. Okay, we have a bunch of bills today. We're going to try to get our best to get through them. First is some local TIF projects. First up is House File 160. Representative Bonner, welcome to the committee. Please describe your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am here to move or to represent House File 160. Chairs and members, I appreciate the opportunity for you to hear House File 160, the moderated version of the bill agreed upon last session in this very committee. Young families have found Maple Grove to be a tremendous place to live. Recent efforts in the area, like Boston Science.
Representative Bonner, I'm sorry, could you just pull the mic a little closer to your mouth? I think some members are having trouble hearing you. And we're trying to move the increase the volume up here. But
no worries.
Are they
Can
not
we hear me?
Check, check. Representative Hollins, I think we're going to blame her because she.
No. Wait, that was not.
All right. I don't know. Are they on? Doesn't seem like they're on.
Hello.
Oh, you did? Yeah. Chair her, help us out here.
I think it was, nope. Testing. Did you hear? Could you hear?
Well, you have the good acoustics in the room, so it's fine.
I think the ones at the table seem to be on. I don't know that this
Oh, here, I did that. Sorry.
There we are.
Oh,
now there.
Ah, there you go. I muted it.
All right, thank you. Excellent. Chair her, thanks for the assist. Apologies, Representative Bonner, to your bill, House File 160.
Chairs and members, I appreciate that you want to hear my scintillating presentation. I appreciate the opportunity to hear House File 160, the moderated version of the bill agreed upon last session in this committee. Young families have found Maple Grove to be a tremendous place to live. Recent efforts in the area, like Boston Scientific, currently expanding their footprint, as well as BAE, which will bring 500 jobs to the community. And as you can imagine, we are anxious to continue to expand our thriving community. Over the years, you've seen a handful of gravel mining areas like that in Maple Grove. For much of that time, Maple Grove held off on development while materials benefiting communities across our state were mined and distributed. As you know, these areas can be complex to convert to land use, which brings us here today. Our ask is to extend the timeline for our TIF district originally created in 2014 and extended in 2017 to address the deficiencies in the underdeveloped gravel mining area. In 2017, the TIF district was extended to develop a second area of soil deficiency. Our ask today is to extend the TIF district for an additional 5 years beyond the original to 13 years for a collection of increment financing over the longer timeline of 25 years. This extension is crucial to sustain the momentum to further develop this 2,000-acre gravel mining area and improve for new business development. I appreciate your time today to review our agreed-upon proposal from last session that will allow Maple Grove to continue to thrive and grow. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to my testifier, Mayor Mark Stephenson of Maple Grove.
Welcome, Mayor. Please introduce yourself for the record as you get started with your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Gomez and members of the House Tax Committee. My name is Mark Stephenson. I'm the mayor of Maple Grove. I want to thank the committee for hearing House File 160, which is a TIF amendment bill for the Maple Grove gravel mining area. I want to express my appreciation to Chair Gomez for supporting a moderated version of this bill, which was introduced in 2024. While the tax bill was not ultimately enacted, the bill we are presenting today reflects that prior agreement. The gravel mining area in Maple Grove has served as a source of construction materials for roadways, residential, and commercial development throughout the region for decades. Its close proximity to the developing metro area has provided for efficient and cost-effective access to construction materials for that growth for this area. As Maple Grove considered the next phase of development in the gravel mining area, leaders knew that there was a need to transition away from retail to job-creating industry. Writing the land for the development of industry requires an economic development tool in order to address the soil corrections post-mining, as well as partnership with the city and state to support job creation. Since the inception of the gravel mine area TIF district in 2018, 1.7 million square feet of industrial space has developed and nearly 4,000 jobs have been created. In the area of active development in the gravel mine area, there are 60 areas remaining in the developed Maple Grove, which is being asked to continue that time frame, which started as the Arbor Lakes Business Park and now goes into the Minnesota Science and Technology Center. Our request extends the term of the district to 25 years and extends the five-year rule to 13 years. I want to again emphasize that House File 160 reflects the language agreed upon by the 2024 Tax Conference Committee. Thank you for your willingness to work with Maple Grove to help shape this bill language. I can stand for any further questions.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Mayor Stephenson, and we really do appreciate you bringing forward language that was the agreed upon language from 24, because a bunch of work went into getting us there, so much appreciated. Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Bonner, for bringing this fine piece of legislation, and I hope the committee will support it. Thank you, Mayor. Nice to see you.
Thank you. Is there anything further? Any questions for Representative Bonner or her testifier? Not seeing any. Any final comments for us, Representative Bonner?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members, for hearing this scintillating piece of TIF legislation, and we look forward to its passage.
Thank you so much. I forgot to move that we are gonna lay this bill over for possible inclusion, but I'm renewing my motion that I didn't make earlier, and the bill is laid over. Thank you, Representative Bonner. All right, up next, we have Representative Cleavorn with House File 512. Thank you for being here, Chair Cleavorn. Please go ahead and describe your bill whenever you're ready.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate the committee hearing the bill today, and I want to thank you specifically, Chair Gomez, for our robust conversation in 2024 and for helping us pare this bill down to make it even better. So thank you for helping us right-size this bill. We appreciate the work that you put into this vision last session, and we are hopeful that we can get the bill across the finish line this year. This TIF bill would allow the city to leverage tax increment financing to fund essential regional infrastructure to promote safety and mobility in Plymouth City Center, support affordable housing development, connectivity to transit, and community gathering spaces. This bill authorizes the City of Plymouth to establish up to two redevelopment districts within the city center. With me today, I have Mayor Washi to testify to the bill and City Manager Dave Callister to assist if we have any questions that the committee may have.
Thank you very much, Chair Cleavorn. Mayor Washi, please introduce yourself and go ahead with your testimony.
Yeah, Chair Gomez and committee members, my name is Jeff Washi. I'm the mayor of the City of Plymouth. I want to thank you for having me here today, and I'd like to start by thanking Representative Cleavorn for authoring and supporting this bill, as well as Chair Gomez for getting the bill to this point. Chair and committee members, the city requests authority to use tax increment financing to support infrastructure improvements needed to pave the way for a vibrant redevelopment in the heart of the city, the Plymouth City Center. Proposed infrastructure improvements include three priorities. First, redesigning the area's central roadway, Plymouth Boulevard, to help create a walkable downtown with safer crossing, calmer traffic, and improved access to restaurants, retail, and recreation. And while most of this project was completed in 2024, there's still more work we will be doing in the future. Second, regional ponding to modernize stormwater infrastructure and offer redevelopment flexibility, allowing for increased density and mobility through new housing opportunities and bus rapid transit. And finally, construction of a public parking ramp to support extended transit services, help alleviate parking constraints, and pave the way for potential bus rapid transit on Highway 55. Chair and committee members, using TIF within Plymouth City Center is a very important issue for our city's future. Bolstering safety and access in the area will help pave the way for vibrant redevelopment. And TIF funding will also help support affordable housing and transit opportunities. We respectfully request your support of House File 512. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mayor Washi. Are there any questions from the committee for Chair Cleburne or Mayor Washi or anyone else? All right, not seeing any. Representative Cleburne, any final thoughts for us?
I would just ask that you move the bill for possible inclusion. Thank you.
Excellent. Thanks for the reminder. I will do that. So I'm going to move that this bill be, that House File 512 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2025 tax bill, and it is laid over. Thank you so much. All right, up next, we have House File 158, Representative Katiza Watum. I'm going to move that House File 158 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2025 tax bill. Chair Katiza Watum, welcome. Please go ahead with your testimony or with your, describe your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And committee for hearing this bill today. House File 158 reflects the work of the 2024 Tax Conference Committee and hoping to get it across the line this session. So particularly, Chair Gomez, really want to appreciate the work that you did toward the end of last session for working toward a moderated version of the project last year, and the bill today represents that language, so we're grateful for that flexibility. For those of you who are new to the committee this year, because those of you who are on the committee last year would have heard this bill in the original form, House File 158 helps the city of Eden Prairie to begin to tackle the redevelopment of the Eden Prairie Center. Many cities across the country, as we know, as consumers are changing their buying habits, large malls are struggling as people, just shop more online, they shop more secondhand. All of those changes have an impact on our existing infrastructure. So converting these traditional uses over time requires flexibility and particularly some economic development tools, which include tax increment financing. So House File 158 attempts to do this by allowing for up to 2 redevelopment districts and affords an exemption from the blight finding and the corresponding blight correction spending. I have with me Dave Lindahl, who is Eden Prairie's Community Development Director, and he can further explain the issues that are facing this particular site in Eden Prairie.
Thank you, Representative Katiza Watum. Welcome to the committee. Mr. Lindahl, please just introduce yourself and go ahead.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Dave Lindahl. I'm the Economic Development Manager for the City of Eden Prairie. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to talk briefly about the Eden Prairie Mall again. Thank you also, Chair Gomez, for working through the moderated version of this project last year, and our bill today represents the same version. So the Eden Prairie Center was built in the 1970s. It's the third largest mall in Minnesota. It's got 1.4 million square feet of retail space. It has 4 department stores that are privately owned, and the JCPenney's, which is now closed, and the inline retail has separate ownership. That's the part of the mall that's in trouble. Primarily the inline part of the mall. It provides 2,400 jobs, and those employees come from all over the metro area. It attracts visitors from throughout the region, and in its prime was attracting 12 million visitors annually. Unfortunately, that's down to about 7 to 8 million today. So the mall is really a regional attraction. It's both a local and a regional asset. But like many malls around the state and around the country, it's struggling economically. It's got significant challenges. Its value has dropped significantly over the last 6 years. It's depreciated by about 65%. And the inline retail has record vacancies. So the city's really been encouraging the mall owners to consider redeveloping the poorly performing parts of the mall with non-retail uses, like hotel, office, housing, things like that. And that's exactly what the owners are proposing to do. They have a proposal in right now for a very large redevelopment of the whole north end of the mall. They would take out about 300,000 square feet of existing retail and replace that with a hotel, housing, with some retail, new retail, office, and some entertainment. We believe the plan will help prevent further decline of the mall. We think it'll help maintain current employment levels and will also significantly increase the value of the mall. But even though the mall is struggling economically, it's still physically in pretty good shape, so it doesn't meet the blight test for tax increment financing. So that's really what we're asking for, is an exception to that rule. So we're looking for the flexibility to consider using TIF to support the project. We want to be proactive in preventing the mall from further decline and supportive of the major redevelopment investment being proposed by the owner. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lindahl. Are there any questions for Chair Katizawatun? Representative Anderson.
I have a quick one. Does inline mean inside or outside?
Mr. Lindahl.
Madam Committee Member, yes, it does include basically everything besides the department stores would be considered the inline part of the mall. Okay.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. I was kind of wondering the same thing. Getting us up on our mall lingo. Thank you. Any further questions? All right, not seeing any. Representative Katizawatun, any final comments for us?
Thank you again, Madam Chair and committee members, for hearing our request. I appreciate any support and consideration that you can provide to get this over the finish line this year. I think that one of the things that's really important is that malls have been community hubs. They can still serve that purpose, but we just have to bring it into the next century potentially. And so with housing, green space, hotels, office space, I think that this will continue to be a thriving part of our community, and it truly is kind of a regional asset. Those of us of a certain age will remember it's being featured in Mall Rats, and I run into members of this committee in various parts of Eden Prairie. Senator Swadzinski and I have bonded over a Costco trip a few months ago, and I think that it just is for those of us who are entering the metro area from the southwest, Eden Prairie is a great place to stop and shop. So appreciate your commitment to economic development in this area.
Thank you very much, Chair Katizawatun. If you told us about the Mall Rats thing, I didn't remember it from last year, so I appreciate you updating the committee on that important issue. With that, I'm going to renew my motion that House File 158 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2025 tax bill, and it's laid over. Thank you. All right. Up next, Chair Fisher, House File 157. I'm going to move that House File 157 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2025 tax bill. Representative Fisher, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Gomez and committee, for the opportunity to present House File 157. The bill does a couple of things. I want to highlight lines 2.2 to 2.4. This is changing the boundaries of the district, choosing the street boundaries that we have in the area. The other change is at the very end, starting line 2.18, which is the effective date. This is very important for the city of Maplewood. We currently have a mall on our north end that is deteriorating, Maplewood Mall. It has four major anchors. Out of the four major anchors, one was Sears that vacated a number of years ago. That part of the mall has dealt with a lot of problems with graffiti and other kind of deterioration. It is under stress. Another major anchor just exited from the mall, which was Macy's. So it is a mall that is in very tough shape right now in terms of going forward, needs help from the community to make sure that it does not continue in a downward spiral. With that, I have two testifiers from my community. I'd like to turn it over to them.
All right. Welcome to the committee. Please, if you guys are both going to testify, please keep your testimony fairly brief, but go ahead and introduce yourself. And
certainly, Madam Chair, thank you. My name is Mike Sable. I'm the city manager for the city of Maplewood, and I want to thank Representative Fisher for carrying this bill. Maplewood is a strong and diverse community with many assets, but like other communities that we've even heard today, we have areas that need strategic support to reach their full potential. One area is the north end surrounding the Maplewood Mall District. A once thriving retail hub is now facing significant economic challenges. Like many malls around the country, the Maplewood Mall has seen a decline in foot traffic, shifts in customer behavior, and aging infrastructure, and these conditions make redevelopment considerably more complex and urgent. We know that redevelopment doesn't happen overnight, and it certainly doesn't happen without the right tools. Tax increment financing has been one of those tools that's worked for the city of Maplewood. It's helped us transform underused areas into productive spaces that support housing, business growth, and community amenities. This bill gives us the ability to be more proactive with existing resources and allowing us to reinvest in places that need it the most. This kind of flexibility is critical, and without it, we risk stagnation in areas that could be instead become engines for growth and opportunity. Strong redevelopment requires strong partnerships. As a city, we're closest to the issues and have a vision and the capacity to lead, but we need the support of state leaders like you to bring that vision to life. The investments made possible by this bill not only benefit Maplewood, they'll contribute to a stronger regional economy and a better quality of life for residents. Thank you for recognizing the importance of local flexibility and supporting the tools that cities need to grow thoughtfully on behalf of the city of Maplewood. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further testimony or no? Okay, thank you. Are there any questions from the committee? Chair Herr.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. And I don't know if this is for Representative Fisher or maybe your testifiers. So I recently learned that the Sears building at Maplewood and also I think the Macy's buildings were bought by Hmong developers. And when I asked them, are you getting any support from the city in the work that you're doing in the redevelopment? Because I think that many people who maybe follow what has happened at that mall and seen its decline has seen that it has actually been ethnic communities have really revitalized that mall. I'm curious as to, like, when we're giving benefits to cities in order to help with redevelopment, that how are you ensuring that when it is developers or people from communities who do not understand how to navigate this process to get benefits and they're developing and sort of scrapping together everything that they can to invest into these buildings, how are you working with them to ensure that they understand the tools and levers that exist? Because they informed me that they had no idea that they could be a partner with the city in some of the work that they're doing.
Mr. Sable, or?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd be happy to answer that question, sure. Representative. We have been in contact with the owner of both the Sears property and the Macy's property. It's two ownership groups. They had originally approached us for potential use of the Minnesota Investment Fund and Job Creation Fund, and we had suggested that those were probably not approaches. We have since modified our approach to include this. Additional flexibility with existing TIF dollars is an opportunity to partner with those developers. And so we need the authority first before we can engage in a really thoughtful conversation. We are continuing to work with them on both on two outdoor retail markets, and we expect both of those to be up and running this year. The ownership group is in constant communication with Community Development Director Parr, and so we're excited for what's next because we do think that is going to be the central hub for entrepreneurship in the city of Maplewood, and we really look forward to supporting that. We just need a little bit more flexibility to help make it a reality.
Representative Herr, anything else? Okay, thank you. Are there any further questions? All right, not seeing any. Any final thoughts to share with us, Chair Fisher?
Thank you, Chair Gomez, and committee appreciate the opportunity to present the bill and look forward to being included in your final overall bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. With that, I'll renew my motion that House File 157, is that the right one? Yes, be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2025 tax bill, and it is laid over. Thank you. All right, up next, 1746, Chair Lilly. Welcome to the committee. I'm going to move that House File 1746 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2025 tax bill. All right. We got the mics working for you, Lily. Don't worry about it. Please go ahead and describe your bill.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Our bill is pretty straightforward. Oakdale's requesting an extension for a TIF that they've been working on, and with the last couple of years, no surprise, has been complicated for everyone, and putting this little Rubik's Cube together is a little tricky, a little project. It's actually really close to here. It's out 36 and close to Tanner's Lake, and they're trying to redevelop. Oakdale's been a great steward of TIF projects in the past. If you ever get a chance to go to the Oakdale Mall, and if you remember what it was before, it's Oakdale Mall is gone, but it's an amazing, they've been incredible stewards, but I'd like to pass it to a smart person, and have this Mr. Stark take over and kind of explain it.
All right, another smart person. Mr. Stark, please introduce yourself and go ahead with your testimony.
Yes, thank you. My name is John Stark. I'm the Special Projects Manager with the City of Oakdale. Being a smart person is a lot to live up to, so give me some grace. First of all, the City of Oakdale is very appreciative of efforts to extend TIF spending resulting from the pandemic that this body supported in the past. The Tanner's Lake project has been an extremely complex redevelopment project that was actually begun in 2007. The city acquired blighted properties at that time and demolished them. Since that time, we had a housing market collapse, we had the Great Recession, and we had a pandemic. And those have greatly impacted the ability to get this done. I'm happy to tell you that we do have a project that's 99% done. It's a $44 million project that includes 126 apartment units and 12 townhomes, some community space along Tanner's Lake. It's going to be a great asset for the community and for the metro writ large. All approvals for the project have been granted. We're working through some technical details related to utilities, road alignments, and easements. And those technical details, while they sound easy, are time-consuming, and we need a little time to work through those. Our current hope is that we would beat the current December 31st, 2025 deadline in the COVID extension, but we're seeking an extension just as a margin of error. We would hate to see this project be at the you know, 1 yard line, and just the clock striking midnight on December 31st would be the thing that would kill it. This project would not be feasible but for the use of TIF funds. And so I thank you for the opportunity to testify, and would be happy to entertain any questions.
All right, thank you so much for your testimony. Are there any questions for the author or the testifier? All right, not seeing any. Representative Lilly, any final thoughts for us?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And I was thinking about doing an amendment if we could raise the taxes of Rosemont to help pay for to pay for this.
I believe that would be in order.
No, but thank you for hearing this. And Oakdale really has been amazing stewards of the TIF funds that I remember in the past during my tenure. And I'm certain that the they will again on this one. Sorry, that was a weird sentence. But
that's anyway, great. Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair Lilly. And we always appreciate when our testifiers basically cite statute and say the words "but for" when they're talking about a TIF project. Those are music to our ears. So thank you so much. And with that, I will renew my motion that House File 1746 be laid over for possible inclusion, and it's laid over. Thank you, Chair Lilly. All right, so we're going to do a couple, maybe just one general law change. Oh, is Chair Yoakim? Oh, sorry. You snuck up there on me. Okay, so I didn't do my standard disclaimer before we heard the local projects on TIF, because apparently I come on a little strong about it sometimes, so I'm just going to do it not related to any specific project. But I just want to clarify that cities are allowed by right in statute to establish TIF districts as long as they comply with the regulations in statute. Every local project that comes in front of this committee is asking for an exception to existing state law. And so, you know, there's a reason that TIF, there's a reason that TIF regulations are strong. Because you're basically using up your future property tax base in order to complete a development project. And we really want, cities bring these projects forward, but cities are not the only taxing jurisdiction that are impacted by foregoing tax base for, in some cases, decades, right? As there are more and further extensions of these. So I just wanted to say that. I know that Representative Anderson's kind of looking at me like, yes, she knows very well about the specifics on these projects and why it is that we constrain their use because of the impacts on, you know, every taxing jurisdiction in the same geography's ability then to meet their needs the obligations that they have to our shared constituents. So, you know, the first few local projects that we heard, we had already seen last year, and we had constrained them sort of through that process. And then we have a couple of new projects that we'll be looking at, you know, with a discerning eye. I personally, you know, creativity and flexibility with TIF are not for the future, the people who are about to come up and testify, don't use those words probably. They're sort of like, just because TIF is not designed to be your creative, flexible tool. It's actually kind of designed to be a very specific and constrained tool that is used judiciously by cities in order to meet very specific economic development goals that otherwise would not be possible. And so that's kind of what we're looking for when we when we look at those. So apologies, Chair Joachim, that you had to sit up there through that. But I think that your bill, which is a general law change, sort of, you know, speaks to some of those implications for TIF that we don't always consider when we're hearing individual one-off local TIF bills. So with that, Chair Joachim's you're gonna move that 1159 be laid over in the 2025 tax bill.
Yes,
excellent.
Thank you, Chair Gomez.
And I believe you have an amendment, the A1 author's amendment.
I do have the A1 amendment, and it adds income averaging as a tool for cities who are using TIF and want to access exempt facility bonds. Income averaging also provides cities with the ability to get as low as 20% of AMI in some of the units when they're doing redevelopment for affordable housing.
All right, excellent. Are there any questions about the A1 amendment to House File 1159? Not seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? No. Motion carries. The A1 amendment is adopted. House File 1159 is in the shape you'd like. Chair Joachim, to your bill.
Yes, and Chair Gomez, I want to thank you for talking about TIF. You're right. It should be a tool used judiciously. And in 2021-22 session, we did a big overhaul with the state auditor and some of the developers around TIF to clean up the statutes and make it more effective. And districts, I'd highly encourage cities as well. When I left city council, right before I left, we went through with our TIF management company and streamlined our districts and tried to get some off the tax rolls, and something that cities should always be continually looking at. So thank you, Chair Gomez and members, for hearing House File 1159 today. Under current law, any district can have set aside 10% of their income for housing. This bill increases that to 15%. This bill also allows a set aside of excess increment to be transferred to a city's affordable housing trust fund. There's a handout in your packets, I believe, about the affordable housing trust funds and how a city can set one up and what the purpose is. During the 2021 session, the City of St. Louis Park brought forward an idea to put another tool in a city's toolbox to develop affordable housing. At the time, St. Louis Park was one of only 7 cities and 3 counties in the state that had an affordable housing trust fund. In 2023, according to the Minnesota Housing Partnership report, there are 13 cities and 7 counties with affordable housing trust funds, and more are being added. I'm proud to say that the city I live in, Hopkins, just passed an ordinance to create an affordable housing trust fund. These funds are a mechanism to invest in affordable housing. In 2021, St. Louis Park did not want to request additional funds for affordable housing, knowing that the budget was slim, but rather they looked for ways to utilize the tools they already had at their disposal in a more flexible manner. Madam Chair. And that is exactly what their bill proposal did. Their bill allowed excess TIF increment to be transferred into affordable housing trust funds only for specific uses. The final bill that passed in 21, special session tax bill, wasn't statewide, but a pilot project that allowed 3 cities, St. Louis Park, Richfield, and Minnetonka, to transfer excess TIF increment into their affordable housing trust funds with 2 sets of allowable uses: to make grants, loans, and loan guarantees for the development, rehabilitation, or financing for housing, or match other funds from federal, state, or private resources for housing projects. The pilot project required a reporting on what funding was transferred and how it was used, and that report, I had them combine them all into 1 2-page report that you see in your packet. We're here today because the pilot project expires on December 31st, 2026, and it worked. We have great results, and House File 1159 would allow cities across the state who have or develop an affordable housing trust fund to transfer excess TIF increment into their trust funds for rental housing purposes to benefit households at or below 60% AMI, and for home ownership housing purposes to benefit households at or below 120% AMI. Members, like I said, the result for the 3 city pilot projects are very impressive. It really did help cities put some skin in the game when it came to building affordable housing. You can see that in the report, and you'll hear some of that in the experiences with testimony today. I believe I have a remote testifier, Karen Barton. She's our community development director from the City of St. Louis Park.
Excellent. Thank you, Chair Joachim. Moving now to our testifier. You could just introduce yourself for the record as you get started with your testimony.
Thank you, Chairs of the Tax Committee and committee members. I'm Karen Barton, Community Development Director for the City of St. Louis Park. St. Louis Park, along with the cities of Minnetonka and Richfield, received special legislation in 2021 to allow us to deposit unobligated pooled TIF into our Affordable Housing Trust Fund, which has been an extremely successful tool to facilitate the construction and preservation of affordable housing. The legislation has allowed St. Louis Park to access almost $5 million that we otherwise wouldn't have been able to access to facilitate the construction of over 420 affordable new housing units in our community, including 45 deeply affordable units, affordable at 30% of the area median income. All told, the three cities, almost $9 million was transferred into the respective affordable housing trust funds, resulting in over 550 new affordable housing units created in 2022 and 2023, of which over 80 were affordable to households at 30% of area median income. As you're aware, affordable units are very costly to create, typically requiring subsidies ranging on average from $150,000 a unit to upwards of $350,000 per unit, depending on level of affordability. But by tapping into this resource, we're able to judiciously leverage private investment through the use of minimal public assistance. The average public investment utilizing the pooled tax increment through the special legislation was approximately $13,000 per unit. This effectively represented $10 in private investment leveraged for every $1 in pooled TIF investment at a minimum. Additionally, the special legislation does not require the state to obligate new funds to affordable housing. Instead, it utilizes a current tool, TIF, in a different way without creating additional tax burdens. Given the great success of this program over the past several years for just three cities, the City of St. Louis Park is very supportive of this proposed legislation to make this tool broadly available to help address the affordable housing shortage and support communities statewide. I'd also like to comment on the income averaging amendment. St. Louis Park is very supportive of modifying the housing TIF district income qualifications to allow levels to vary to support more deeply affordable units and for the overall long-term financial feasibility of development projects. Affordable projects that currently receive low income housing tax credits are able to utilize income averaging to comply with tax credits. So it's not a new concept, but it's a very effective one. It allows greater diversity in individual properties by permitting the higher income units to offset more deeply affordable units. So owners may be able to offset lower revenues from units set aside at 30% or even 20% AMI with units designated for 70 or 80% AMI. It also improves the long-term financial viability of projects. I'd also note that income averaging also benefits rural areas that have very low area median incomes, but lack the population base to fill a building that has a strict 80% AMI cap. And I'd like to also point out that the overall affordability goal of the TIF district is still being met, 40% of the units affordable at 60% area median income, but a wider range of incomes are served and the project remains viable with a sufficient cash flow. So income averaging, small modification, big impacts. Thank you for your time today, and I'm happy to entertain any questions that you may have.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Ms. Barton. Moving now to member discussion. Are there any questions for Chair Joachim or from her testifier? Chair Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Chair Joachim, for bringing this bill. I actually ran into the mayor of St. Louis Park, I can't even remember where, somewhere in January, and she was all about this. She hardcore cheerleading for this bill was very interesting conversation. But I'm just wondering, because I just looked through the bill, is it tied directly and only to multifamily housing, or can you use it also for naturally occurring affordable housing?
Chair Joachim.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll have to look, because there's a wide variety of what affordable housing trust funds can be used for, and I believe that NOAA is one of them. But maybe I'll go to nonpartisan staff just to make sure.
Mr. Cope?
Madam Chair, Representative Robbins, the funds in the local housing trust fund are not restricted for whether they can be used on single-family homes or multifamily homes. So either would be allowable. There are just limitations on the sorts of expenditures. Generally, it has to be down payment assistance or some sort of financial assistance for the household, or alternatively development subsidies, or meeting a matching requirement with another funding source or administrative expenses. But within those parameters, either sort of housing could be assisted.
Okay. Great.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? All right. Seeing none, Chair Joachim, any final thoughts for us?
Members, thanks for the question. Thanks for the discussion. We all heard stories in our communities about the need for affordable housing and workforce housing. This is a way to provide our cities across the state with another tool that to meet that need and at no cost to the state. I would like to thank the three cities who participated in the pilot project and gathered the data for us to make sure that the tool could work. Affordable housing trust funds are a valuable but underutilized tool. Hopefully that will change. This bill could encourage more cities to develop affordable housing trust funds in order to be key partners in constructing more units, diversifying their affordable housing stock, and expanding affordable homeownership across the state. Thank you for your consideration, and I would love to have this provision be part of a larger tax bill.
Thank you so much, Chair Joachim. And with that, Chair Joachim will renew her motion that House File 1159, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2025 tax bill, and the bill is laid over. Thank you very much. All right, up next, Representative Hollins, House File 2585, and I'll move that House File 2585 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2025 tax bill. Welcome.
It's like looking into a mirror.
Yeah, I know, right? Here we are. Please go ahead, present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee members. I am here to present House File 2585. As the committee heard the CUB tax credit earlier this session, given the financial cost of the CUB tax credit, we recognize that that could create some challenges with the budget targets. So the City of St. Paul has looked for an additional economic tool to help with our housing crisis that we face. I think, you know, you all know that we have a number of vacant buildings in downtown St. Paul, and we are looking to convert those buildings into housing. These vacant buildings have started to negatively impact our residents in the rest of St. Paul. They're losing value and shifting the property tax increases to residential homes in our communities. I live on the east side of St. Paul, which is one of the last places that you can affordably buy a house. And I have heard from a number of elderly residents on fixed incomes, as well as new families, that their property taxes have increased substantially between 30 and 50% over the past couple of years. And so this is really a huge burden for them. You know, the recent decline of downtowns has been attributed to the global pandemic, potentially safety risks, lack of green spaces, et cetera. But the reality is the migration out of the urban core is more nuanced. There's a combination of everything, and downtowns aren't just declining because of who's leaving, but because of who they've been designed to keep out. Downtowns have historically functioned as central business districts for corporate and national conglomerates. So in other words, downtowns are sort of a headquarters for the upper class and status quo. So the biggest task in front of us is to transform our downtowns from a place of choice to a place of opportunity, where our housing, entertainment, event infrastructure, and more can sustain the level of demand and activity that we're witnessing. Currently, downtown St. Paul has an occupancy rate of 92% housing, which means that people want to live in downtown when the housing is available. And I know many of you are only here 5 to 6 months out of the year. I'm here every single day, and so I've gotten to witness the decline of our downtowns and see what this looks like and the number of people who have been priced out of downtown. So the city is aiming to add 20,000 more residents to downtown to help us build out our downtown infrastructure. Last year, the City of St. Paul worked with the Downtown Alliance to craft a downtown investment strategy, which provided three recommendations. The St. Paul Downtown Alliance worked with Gensler to produce an Office of Residential Conversion Study, and I think you have a copy of that report in your packets. The report evaluated 20 buildings in downtown St. Paul and found that 10 office buildings met certain criteria to be good candidates to be converted. To do these conversions, the city of St. Paul is looking at special law for usage of redevelopment TIF, which costs the state of Minnesota nothing. This special legislation does several changes to the redevelopment law. It would allow us to create up to three...
Representative Hollins, I'm sorry, but we got a little... Our wire's a little crossed here. We're talking about... You're presenting House File 2574, which is for converting underutilized buildings, and then there's a separate one that's 2585 that's about Excel, I believe.
It's not about Excel, but yeah, I was doing 2585.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Oh, well, okay, because you're referring to this report that's in our 2574... or House File 2574 packet, and that is for converting vacant or underutilized properties. I don't know. Maybe I can just ask Mr. Cope. Am I confused? Or are Vice Chair Joy and I both equally confused? Or what are
they related?
Maybe it's us. Could be us.
It should be applicable to both.
Yeah.
Really?
Okay. Well, the packet that Representative Hollins is referring to is in 2574 bill chunk, whatever you call it, materials. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. I'm just confused. Excuse
That's
me.
That's okay. Thank you. Now I don't remember where I was. Okay. Oh, we did that.
Okay.
Right. So this bill would allow the city of St. Paul to establish three redevelopment districts in its downtown district, 17 boundaries, operating under special rules. So the special rules of the legislation would include allow establishment of redevelopment districts in areas not meeting the statutory blight definition, allow for non-contiguous parcels to be included in the districts even if those parcels are not blighted, exempt the districts from requiring that at least 65% of the increment be spent within the district so long as the increment is spent in the downtown area. And most importantly to me, the authority to establish a district would expire on June 30th, 2034, or June 30th, 2030, if the city of St. Paul did not establish at least one district by that time. I have my testifier here, Nicole Newton, from the Planning and Economic Development Director for the city of St. Paul, and I would like to turn it over to her.
All right, Ms. Newton, thank you. Please go ahead with your testimony.
Good morning, Madam Chair, committee members. I am Nicole Newton. I'm the Director of the Department of Planning and Economic Development for the City of St. Paul, as mentioned. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of this legislation offered by Representative Hollins. Thank you, Representative Hollins, for carrying this. In order to allow redevelopment TIF flexibility in downtown St. Paul, as mentioned, high levels of office vacancy in downtown St. Paul have led to significantly devalued office buildings and the closures of businesses and services previously supported by downtown employees. Without intervention, this situation will contribute to a continuing cycle of blight, reducing property values downtown and increasing the property taxes for homeowners across the city. I won't discuss the study because it's already been mentioned, but I'll point out that it's costly to redevelop existing buildings, and the barriers to converting these buildings to a productive use are significant. We know, though, that the cost to demolish a vacant building and rebuild new is significantly more expensive and frankly less sustainable. TIF is an important tool for redevelopment. As you mentioned, Chair, it needs to be applied strategically and judiciously. But when applied in that way, it can catalyze other development in the area. To have the flexibility to use TIF in a given area such as this and use the increment that's created by the redevelopment of those certain buildings can support market recovery and lead to redevelopments that don't require financial support. That's the strategy that needs to be employed in judiciously applying this tool. Flexibility in the use of redevelopment TIF is particularly well suited at this moment to address the issues of the downtown of our capital city and will be one of the necessary tools for these projects to be feasible. The adaptive reuse of vacant office buildings to housing will create jobs, increase the housing supply, increase the value of our downtown buildings and the downtown tax base, and increase our population downtown. As these spaces fill with activity, property values rise, tax revenues grow, and surrounding businesses thrive, creating a ripple effect of economic revitalization. I ask for your support today as you put the tax omnibus bill together to include the special legislation and provide a more effective tool for economic development and recovery. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. We'll move to member discussion now. I'll just ask one question, then we'll go to Representative Anderson. The one thing that is true about, I think, this bill and another, maybe Representative Jones's bill that's coming up, is about the value of the land, the net tax capacity being set as just the value of the land rather than the assessed value of the property. And I don't recall seeing that before. And I would, I mean, I'm trying to think through how that would work. It would mean that there would be, you know, more, you would just count, I don't want to characterize it, you would count a much higher level of increment if you started not with the assessed value of like a high rise, but just the value of the land. And so I just wonder if somebody can tell me a little bit more about that.
Chair, let me start, but we've got Michaela Hewitt from here from Baker Tilly, who's an expert in TIF as well, who can elaborate. But you're exactly right. It's a mechanism to allow for the calculation of more increment. It allows us to be able to have more efficacy in the application of the tool.
But you say the capture of more increment, but it's not increment if it's not like an actual increase in value, I would argue. But I'll go to your testifier. If you wouldn't mind just introducing yourself, and I didn't hear the organization that you're with, if you could just say that also as you get started.
Sure. So, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Michaela Hewitt with Baker Tilly, municipal advisor firm in St. Paul. The question regarding the valuation decreasing down to land, I think, you know, with tax increment financing, the increased value is what generates the increment, and oftentimes if we're looking at a reuse of an existing structure, that existing land and building value is higher, leading to less increment that could be generated over the life of the district. So with the language as drafted, having the land, existing land value only as base value allows the capturing of any of the value growth above the existing land. So if there's renovations to the buildings that are included within the district, that would become the tax increment that can be captured to finance the redevelopment costs of the buildings and the districts.
Just so I'm understanding. So, but if you set the value of the property not at its assessed value, but at a much lower value, just the land, then that shift in property value, that means that this project would constitute a bigger shift onto other property taxpayers than if you use the sort of normal process of evaluating the increment under TIF. Is that right?
Right. In the scenario that if you create an existing, under the current law, when you create a district, it's the existing building and land value. With the renovations to the properties within the district, the increment is generated by the increased value, and the thought with having the base value be set to just the land, it jump starts the amount of increment that is generated by the district based on the building value plus the improved building value with the additional renovation. So it does change it does change and allows essentially a capturing of the building value. And I think the information that has been shared is those values have been declining over time. And so the thought is to stop the decline, invest in those buildings, capture both the existing building value and what will be generated by the district, and use the tax increments to finance those improvements.
Okay, thank you. Is there anybody who knows, and actually Representative Anderson, you might know, because it says on our bill summary that this practice is allowed for properties in qualified disaster areas. I'm just wondering if this has been used outside of those areas, Mr. Cope, or I don't know if you know anything about that. We'd have to be wary of creating precedent with TIF, obviously, as a state legislature. So, Mr. Cope.
Madam Chair, members, not to my knowledge, I'd have to look. There are other circumstances in which the original net tax capacity can be less than the current net tax capacity at the time that the district is formed, like when there's a pollution remediation required on the site. But to my knowledge, qualified disaster area is the only situation in which we've allowed value of the land to be used as the original net tax capacity.
Okay, thank you. Did you have anything further?
And I would just add to that that the is referenced the hazardous substance sub-district is somewhat mimicking this, where you can capture the existing land and building value to finance certain contaminated costs. So this would, this doesn't go as far down as that would, because the land would remain as base, but it's mimicking the existing hazardous substance sub-district in the regards of how the calculation would be based on.
Great, thank you for that. Representative Anderson, did you have anything?
Thank you. I'll try to be brief. I have a series of questions.
Yeah, sure.
Thank you. Well, first I'll start. What this does is kickstart the pot of TIF money. So the value of the, you know, the TIF district starts, you just got the land value paying regular property taxes, and then the building value would then kickstart into this pot, essentially, of money. So. But how much of downtown St. Paul is in TIF already?
Chair, committee members, I don't know that I have the answer to that question. And I don't know if you do either. We do have TIF districts in downtown, but that that's something that we'd have to follow up on.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, we could maybe if somebody from St. Paul is, I'm seeing Mr. Peterson nodding his head, that we can get that information to the committee, that would be great. Representative Anderson.
Thank you. I think it's important because I know a lot of St. Paul is in TIF. So, you know, there's only so much that can be newly TIFed, I guess, shall we say, unless the districts are changing. I'll be honest, this is a better proposal than the, I mean, they have to do something in the downtowns, I think. They have to do something to redevelop, and this is a potentially a better proposal than some of the others we've seen, I think, because it's internal. But it doesn't do anything for the other property taxpayers. So the residents of St. Paul, I mean, this would take this downtown tax base out of, you know, taxes. Which I think they paid a significant portion of the property taxes in St. Paul, but it would take that out for 20 years. I'm actually open to this idea because it's better than subsidizing for the redevelopment costs, you know. So,
Chair, can I think?
Ms. Newton, yeah, go ahead.
Chair, committee member, I will say much of St. Paul is downtown is already in TIF district.
Yeah.
So this legislation would allow us to have the flexibility sort of calculate the increment in a different way. But what we need to do, as you've mentioned, is bring the values up in downtown, is get development happening. And again, if projects supported by TIF are successful and the values come up and the market changes, then the momentum gets going and we don't have to subsidize so much with TIF. That's what allows the residential property taxes to not be impacted so much by the loss of the value of the commercial properties downtown. So I don't think you would see a huge difference in the amount of properties, of the amount of tax capacity that's not being, that's being redistributed. It would just be, we would be able to calculate the TIF in a different way and capture more increment to be able to do more good. We do have a policy, sort of an internal policy, that we don't capture more than about 10% of our tax capacity citywide in tax increment regardless, and that's something that we always look at. So your concern is valid and is something that we address on an ongoing basis.
Representative Anderson?
We should talk about this more in depth because it is, we have to do something with the downtown. I mean, if you leave them as is, they're not going to help residential property taxes either in the long run, you know. But normally I'm anti-TIF, but, I mean, this maybe is. Maybe this is part of a solution. So, thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Anderson. Chair Swedzinski.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. Just a general question, too. Kind of what we've seen a lot with commercial property values, I think the biggest example would be in Minneapolis. That's probably in the forefront was the Ameriprise building that, you know, in 2016 was valued at over $200 million. I believe just last year sold for six. It'd be interesting to see kind of from a valuation standpoint, my property values, still continue to grow from an egg value standpoint back home. How is that process, just because of the dramatic change in the outlook and usage of downtown since COVID, how has that valuation changed throughout? And then how does it involve TIF? Because, if we're taking valuations of legit, if you're selling a property, not necessarily taxable property, but what its actual value is, like how is that keeping up with the total valuation within the city? So if you have many commercial buildings, I know downtown St. Paul's got a pile of them for sale. How does the valuation from the actual sales and how quickly is that seen on the bottom line for taxpayers? Because, we're trying to, essentially with these bills is we're chasing a falling knife when it comes to downtown real estate property. How is that process done? Because you're putting a TIF, you're giving a tax break on a property that is dropping 20, 30, 40% in value within a taxable year when it comes to actual sales, if not more. I thought about this is not a political question, but one of the questions I was thinking about from a downtown valuation standpoint is we're spending almost $1 billion on our state office building just across, and I'm not making political, but what would be the real value of that building? So let's say we decided to just liquefy that building after it's done and sold. What would be its real value as a building? And that's what's happening to our downtowns. So, 6 years ago, 7 years ago, we had a building in Minneapolis, $200 million. That was worth six. What would be the government's buildings that we're investing in to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars? What is that's real value? Is it worth $20 million on the open market? $5 million on the open market? That is the uniqueness of these TIF bills and how they're going to rejuvenate a downtown when does the value itself rejuvenate it, because someone's going to lose their shirt on these investments. The bank's going to lose their shirt. The investment firm's going to lose their shirt. Someone's going to lose their shirt. And we're looking at rural businesses. Oftentimes, that's the case. It's not the first guy that makes it. It's the second or third person that the major first investment, then the bankruptcy, and then the And then finally that valuation and the way it all plays out commercially, that third or fourth person to jump into that space is the one that can actually make it work because it's fallen so far but has had so much revenue dumped into it. This is kind of the opposite where we're like, how does that work in a downtown? That's a really long explanation.
It is, Chair Swinczynski, and man, that state office building gets more expensive every time I hear you guys talk about it. It's pretty wild. It's really a mystery as to how that all happens. So I think we do have Minneapolis coming up. So, but if there was anything in Chair Swinczynski's question that you feel you could respond to, please do so, Ms. Newton.
Madam Chair, just quickly, there were multiple questions. I think there and good comments, but addressing several things. There is a lag in the amount of time it takes for values to increase and for residents to feel that relief around not carrying so much of the tax burden. Committee member, I'm not positive. I think some of that was commentary and some of it was question, but there is a lag. So as the investments are made and the property values go up, that will have a positive impact on residential property taxes. It will take some time. It will take some time for those, for those valuations to change and for the assessments to be made. Would you add anything to that?
I think the only thing I would add is that the expectation is the buildings that are expected to be within these new redevelopment districts are underperforming, hence undervalued in the private sale market. The expectation is once they're redeveloped, become housing, I think it's primary focus, assuming they're fully leased up, that should impact the value, the sale, the overall value, not from a taxable market standpoint. So I think it's purely just the underutilized, low revenue generating buildings that are leading to part of that decline in the overall sale market value.
All right, thank you. Representative Witte.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. Thank you, Representative, for bringing this solution. I think we're trying to figure out what's happening in the downtowns. You kind of mentioned in your beginning part about COVID, people not coming back to work, policies. Is that a big part of it? You know, businesses not allowing people back in the office, or is it some policies around public safety? Because obviously, if the values are going down and you're not getting the same money, is where's that part going to change? Because we can do all the great stuff. Is it going to make it any better? And so I'm kind of looking at it from the two policy questions. Is it more with the companies? Because it sounds like more companies are going back full time. So thank you.
Ms. Newton?
Chair, committee member, that's a great question. And it's a little bit of a chicken and egg thing, right? So I would say we do have both public and private employers who have come back to some degree, but maybe not as much as we would like. St. Paul was very dependent on city, county, state, government employees, and a lot of private employers as well. As you don't have humans in the spaces, you have more desirable activity. So a big piece of the strategy for a downtown recovery in any city in the country who are kind of experiencing what we are, if you don't have humans there, you don't have activity, you don't have eyes on the street, that's when sort of the dysregulated behavior is more prevalent. Just to give you an example, when we had the Yacht Club Festival downtown last summer, we had 35,000 people in downtown for 2 days. There was no crime those days. You know, like it's having humans living, visiting, working in your downtowns, and this is a tool that we need to be able to add to residential. There's development pressure. There's a desire to live downtown. So we are excited to be having office to housing conversions even in flight now, and those that are possible, but will need won't happen but for this assistance. But your observation is correct that not having humans working and living and visiting in any downtown will lead to the kinds of challenges that you're mentioning. And it perpetuates. If you lose the businesses who are supporting people, then people don't want to live there because there are no businesses. So we've got to get it started. We've got to do something, right? And this is a really an excellent tool to kind of jumpstart all of that that we're looking for.
All right, thank you, Representative Witte. Are there any further questions? Representative Anderson.
Thank you. I'm going to add follow up with Representative Witte. So I love St. Paul. I've lived around it. I was born there. I got married there twice.
She liked it so much. She did it twice. All right.
But I can tell the crime issue from someone who lives in the suburbs is a huge issue. I won't even go downtown anymore for stuff. And I used to go to the Ordway and because of the drugs problem downtown. And there are police around, but you've got to solve the crime problem, both cities, and stop this. Because until that happens, you'll never have, you know, people that want to go back, that want to go back to work there, that want to go out there. And so I really encourage your council to get serious about it. You know, people vote with their feet, you know, and they spend their money with their feet, and that's got to be fixed. So,
all right, thank you, Representative Anderson. Any further member discussion? Seeing none, Representative Hollins, can you close us up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee members, for the discussion. I really appreciate the opportunity to present today. Hopefully we can keep the lines of communication open, and we're open to, you know, making changes as needed to bring this forward, and I hope you consider including this in your not omnibus.
Yeah. A budget bill. Our 2025 budget bill. All right. Thank you. All right. Thank you, Representative Hollins. With that, I'm going to renew my motion that House File 2585 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2025 tax bill, and it is laid over. Up next, we have House File 2839, Representative Jones. These bills are sort of similar. You can just consider all the comments on the last bill about the valuation and such to apply also to yours, which does a similar thing. Also, the comments about the state office building. And an important, when we hear from Chair Swedzinski, we always learn new, or I've personally learned new idioms. Chasing a falling knife. I'd never heard that one, but I kind of like it. I think I might use it. Catching a falling knife? Okay. Sounds like a bummer. Don't do that. Okay. Don't run with it. Okay. So I'm going to move that House File 2839 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2025 tax bill. Representative Jones, welcome to the committee. Please describe your bill.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Gomez and members of the committee. I'm Representative Katie Jones from Minneapolis, and I'm excited to bring this bill to you. As has been said, it is very similar to the one you just heard, but I will describe it in brief. So like many cities across the state and country, Minneapolis has experienced a significant change for office space needs coming out of the pandemic, particularly in our downtown core, which I represent. From 2024 to 2025, the estimated market value of the downtown commercial properties decreased by 9.5%. This committee previously heard a bill that would establish a state tax credit for the conversion of underutilized buildings. This bill has a similar goal, but establishing a special TIF authority would allow the city to invest directly in these projects. House File 2839 would allow Minneapolis to create up to 3 TIF districts located in the downtown taxing boundary, which is defined by state law. The key components of this bill is that the auditor shall use the land value when establishing the original net tax capacity of the district, similar to the last bill. This allows an increment to be captured that can be used to invest in vacant or underutilized buildings for adaptive reuse. Minneapolis City Council Member Katie Cashman is here to testify for the bill, and the city's development finance manager, Matthew Hendricks, is here to assist with any questions.
Great. Thank you, Representative Jones. Councilmember Cashman, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and go ahead.
Thank you so much, Chair Gomez, Chair Davids, and committee members. My name is Katie Cashman. I represent Ward 7 on the Minneapolis City Council, about 20,000 of our 60,000 downtown residents. So about a third of the downtown residential population is in my ward. So since I was elected, I've been actively pursuing with community members, housing providers, stakeholders across the downtown core, ways to revitalize downtown to meet the need that we're all very aware of in the changing landscape coming out of the COVID-19 pandemic. We are moving from a 9-to-5 downtown to a 24/7 downtown, and that means greatly increasing the residential population of downtown and converting underutilized buildings. We've had some successes. The North Star building built 500 new units of housing and opened already last year in a former office building. So bringing people back downtown looks different now. We are turning vacant commercial and office spaces into housing and mixed use as an effort to bring downtown back as a residential neighborhood as well. House File 2839 would give the city another tool in its toolbox to invest in adaptive reuse of commercial buildings. We are currently in a very important window of time to make these investments to shape downtown for the future. This special TIF district is time limited. The city would need to create its first district within 5 years and the second and third districts within 9 years. It's limited in scope to downtown, would allow us to package together parcels that are best positioned for adaptive reuse into TIF districts. We, like St. Paul, already have those buildings identified and their ability to convert into housing, and would generate an increment that can be used to invest in these projects. The health of downtown Minneapolis is important to the statewide economy. The city is undertaking strategies to support downtown through public safety, through investments in arts, sports, entertainment, and tourism, and creating a downtown that people want to visit and live in. With the state support of this bill, we can go even further in these efforts to shape the future of downtown Minneapolis. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Cashman. Moving to member discussion, are there any questions for Representative Jones or Councilmember Cashman? Or do we maybe asked all our, sorry, St. Paul, you guys had to go first, so we took it all out of you guys. Please go ahead. Just introduce yourself for the record as you get started, if you don't mind.
Thank you, Chair Gomez and committee members. If I may, I'd like to address one component of a prior question. So there was a question about why setting the base value at the land value is important. And I'm Matthew Hendricks, manager in the City of Minneapolis Development Finance Division. One key aspect here is the idea that many of these properties would be converting from commercial to residential. And as you probably know, the commercial tax capacity rate is 2%. on all value above $150,000. So essentially for a large downtown building, it's 2%. For residential, the value would be taxed using a capacity rate of 1.25% for market rate residential and 0.25% for affordable residential. So in a mixed income building, you're looking at basically the tax capacity dropping to half of what it was before. And so even if the redevelopment doubles the value of the building, which it may or may not do, you're still just holding constant and no increment has been generated. And so the reason we're looking for the change to land value as the base value is not for not related to flexibility or related to, you know, having a stronger TIF component. It's really just to address that conversion issue so that any TIF at all could be generated. Without that change, there's the math just doesn't really work out for the projects to generate tax increment.
Thank you for that, Mr. Hendricks. Mm-hmm. All right, are there any questions, any further questions?
No.
Representative Anderson.
Just quick. I forgot about that. Unless your building's actually worth only land value by the time this gets started, mm-hmm. which I think is the case in many cases. Yeah. So, but you're right. Yeah. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Representative Anderson. All right. Not seeing any further questions or comments, Representative Jones, if there's anything you'd like to say to close us out.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I really appreciate your consideration of this bill. As has been mentioned, our downtowns really need more tools in their toolbox, and I think this is one that we should really be heavily considering so we can bring our downtowns back to the vibrant state that we all want them to be.
Thank you very much. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 2839 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2025 tax bill, and it is laid over. Thank you for being here. All right. Back to Representative Hollins. I won't interrupt you this time. I'm sorry. We Joy and I got a little confused about the difference between 2574 and 2585. So I'm going to move that House File 2574 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2025 tax bill. Representative Hollins, back to you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee. Okay, you're going to know the difference between the last one and this one. This is a difference. You're going to like this.
She's rolling up her sleeves. Everybody get ready.
As I shared in my previous bill and what you heard from Representative Jones, that was special laws for the city of Minneapolis, which was similar to my bill. So this bill would allow general redevelopment TIF law changes citywide to the cities of St. Paul and Minneapolis. This is based on a bill that came before folks last year, which was for the entire state of Minnesota. We have narrowed it considerably to just it's still big, but narrowed it considerably to St. Paul and Minneapolis. I saw the eyebrows. Redevelopment tax increment finance districts can only be established when blight is found in the area and when the districts are established. This bill would expand that definition of blight to include vacant or underused properties in the cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. On line 2.5 of the bill, it adds a section 5 to general law statute that an additional condition may be used to establish a redevelopment TIF district. The property consists of vacant, unused, underused, inappropriately used, or infrequently used property intended or recently occupied for commercial or industrial purposes in Minneapolis or St. Paul. Any redevelopment districts established under this criterion would be exempt from complying with certain information usually required from the city prior to creating the district, and the original net tax capacity would equal the value of the land for parcel containing commercial or industrial buildings determined to be vacant or underused. In case folks are wondering where that definition came from, of the definition of inappropriately used or infrequently used, it came from the existing redevelopment TIF statute 469.174, subdivision 10, subsection, subdivision 10A2, the property consists of vacant, unused, or underused, inappropriately used, or infrequently used rail yards, rail storage facilities, or excessive or vacated railroad rights of way. This general law change will help all of us to address more housing citywide activation, unsheltered support, and public safety to lift up what we have to offer. Meanwhile, showcasing that St. Paul and Minneapolis are vibrant destinations for visitors with opportunities for business. Transforming underutilized plots of land into housing, parks, and increased public usage in the city of St. Paul is key more than ever in the housing crisis we're in. When we invest in our people, they invest in us in return. Despite the challenges of what's next, we're optimistic about the opportunity to rebuild downtown, rejuvenate Grand Avenue, and build new housing on the east side. For examples of what have a city that belongs to everybody, and we're hoping to fill the donut hole using more innovative economic strategy than what's been done in the past. I would now like to turn it over once again to my testifier, Nicole Newton, from the Planning and Economic Development Director in the City of St. Paul.
Thank you, Representative Hollins. Back to you, Ms. Newton.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. Again, I'm Nicole Newton. I'm the Director of Planning and Economic Development with the City of St. Paul. Much of what I said before really regarding TIF applies, but I'll say in this case it's just to build on what Representative Hollins said. You know, times have changed, uses have changed, needs have changed. We have structures that used to do one thing that need to do something else now. And they may not be in horrible condition, they're just obsolete. They're no longer useful for the original use intended. So I think it's just allowing that flexibility to look at a building and say, this no longer functions as a commercial or industrial purpose, but it's still something that we could convert into a use that is productive, and we need to have that flexibility to be able to do that without the typical blight findings that the building be substandard and just not usable. Maybe it is usable, it's just obsolete. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Are there any member questions or discussion? Just do a question. On 2574. All right, not seeing any. Representative Hollins, any final thoughts?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee members, for your consideration. I hope that we will be considered in the inclusion of your big bill.
We'll workshop the name. All right, with that, I will renew my motion that House File 2574 be laid over for possible inclusion in our 2025 big bill. That, it is laid over. All right, finally, Representative Scraba. House File 338, welcome to the committee. Thanks for being here. Vice Chair Joy is going to move that House File 338 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2025 bill. We just call him Joy, you know. But Representative Scraba, to your bill.
I don't know where to start. There's so much potential there. Thank you. Thank you, Chair Gomez, Vice Chair Joy. The joy, I tell you, the joy to be in your committee. So anyway, you guys have just been focusing on the metro really tight and a lot of issues in greater Minnesota, which I represent and which we're going to discuss now, is we have housing. And our issue with housing, we need some changes in the TIF law. To extend the current 5-year rule to 10 years and the 6-year rule to 11 years for TIF districts certified after June 30th. There'd be no impact on the general fund, and to help explain the bill is former Senator Eric Simonson from the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities.
Thank you, Representative Scraba. Senator Simonson, please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, and members. My name is Eric Simonson. I'm representing the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. The CGMC is an organization of about 115 cities, all outside the Twin Cities Metro. And we're appreciative of Representative Scraba for carrying this important piece of legislation on behalf of Greater Minnesota Cities. Most of my comments are going to be to Section 1 of House File 338. Section 1 would make a significant change to the TIF law, specific to what qualifies as a housing district. This provision is an attempt to provide a necessary option for putting together market rate housing developments across Greater Minnesota. Members, the original law, the underlying law here, was created in 1989 and was a TIF tool designed specifically to certain income limitations of residents. Well, I would suggest that is still an ongoing goal of TIF in many instances. The CGMC has taken a position that it is time to consider the use of TIF in certain circumstances where there are no other viable options to attract a private, market rate, or workforce housing development. Greater Minnesota is home to many businesses that provide good wages and are looking to hire more workers. Our largest problem is that in many areas, there simply is nowhere for their employees to live. I am certain that that is not the first time that you have heard that. One of the most challenging economic development challenges we face in Greater Minnesota is building housing to support our workforce. Greater Minnesota continues to suffer from market failure in our housing industry. For single-family homes, the cost to produce a new home is more than what that house will appraise for. And for multifamily rental properties, the rents that our market can support are too low to finance the construction of new units. For new housing to be built in almost every one of our communities, the project will require some sort of financial assistance from the state or the local unit of government. House File 338 would be a new tool for rural Minnesota. To be very clear, it does not minimize any other provisions of current TIF law. Rather, it simply allows a housing TIF district to be considered by local governments for all types of housing, regardless of future occupancy, depending on community need. We know there's been a lot of conversation lately about how to best incentivize housing development in rural Minnesota, and we ask that you understand that what our communities want, they do want to build housing where and when it is needed, but the continued challenge of a broken market is stifling growth. The rest of the bill goes on to talk about a change to the 5- and 6-year rule for certain TIF districts that are created going forward located outside the 7-county metro area. We've been seeing multiple trends where 5 years is simply not enough. The time from start to finish often exceeds 5 years, not to the fault of the community, but because investing in parts of rural Minnesota is not at all like investing or developing in much more dense and urban areas. This change would simply allow the use of the increments toward the redevelopment for an extended period of time without having to forego the project or coming to the legislature to ask for an extension. Members, I thank you for your time. This is a good bill. It's a bill that we've been pushing for a number of years. We appreciate Chair Gomez. We had this contained in the division report and I think the final omnibus bill maybe 2 years ago. And we appreciate the support and we look forward to more discussions as we go forward.
All right, thank you very much for your testimony. Representative Joy.
Thank you, Representative Scraba. Is this your first bill in taxes?
Representative Scraba.
You know, yes.
Vice Chair Joy.
I know you had one in property tax, but this is the big committee taxes here. So usually we have a rule, but I think we're going to let you off on this today. But bring us another good bill so we can have great.
I will.
Representative Scraba.
Yes, Chair Gomez and Vice Chair Joy. I will make ado my error here. So, yes.
All right, sounds good. Are there any further questions?
Oh, you know,
Representative Scraba.
Do I have to bring donuts or can I bring fish?
Representative, that's a question for Vice Chair Joy.
All right, thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Representative Scraba, we really like fried fish as long as it's warm and ready to go. Yeah, we'd entertain that.
Oh, we'll take fried fish from the North Country instead of a donut from Cub Foods any day of the week.
Very good.
I think.
Very good.
All right. Any questions for Representative Scraba on this bill? All right. I'm not seeing any. I'll just say I'm curious about removing all of the income limitations because that would be a really big change, obviously, to the TIF requirements around housing. We also, you're right, Mr. Simonson, that we have been hearing certainly for years in tax committee about, and I'm sure in the housing committee about this challenge around just building adequate housing, even in places in Greater Minnesota where there are a lot of jobs, and that is sort of this mismatch. And to your point, this a broken market and a market failure that you're asking the legislature to intervene in. And, you know, I'm interested just in having further conversations, especially with folks who have housing expertise about this. All right. Not seeing any other questions or comments from committee members. Representative Scraba, any final thoughts for us?
Yeah. Thank you, Chair Gomez. As a member of the Housing Committee, I saw more stuff this year than I saw in housing before, and being a former mayor and representing the whole North Shore and I Falls border communities, watching everyone that the most important issue is housing. Housing, how can we help with housing? So I look at this as like, you know, this, if this will help bring developers and keep them there longer, this is worth it for us in northern Minnesota. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Representative Scraba. With that, Vice Chair Joy renews his motion that House File 338 be laid over for possible inclusion in the 2025 tax bill, and it's laid over. There's no further business in front of the committee. Our next hearing is tomorrow, April 2nd. We'll be hearing two bills, including the governor's budget, and we'll see you then. With that, we are adjourned.